Thanks much.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to this wonderful program. I changed the title because I spent 7 very lovely hours in a car yesterday with Douglas Goff, who kept me in check about nomenclature, as you know, he always does. And so I realize now that semi-convection can mean a lot of different things to different people. And so I wanted to be very precise on the physical process I'm going to talk about today. And this work was done with the help of a lot of wonderful collaborators listed here. And then, if you remember, there was another part about applications to astroseismology, and I'll leave that as a homework to the audience. So I wanted to be very precise on the physical processes. So this audience knows everything about standard convection, I'm sure. And for an incompressible fluid, say your standard pot of water in a kitchen, you are overturning unstable, and I will use this nomenclature, whenever the density increases upward. So for a fluid where density only depends on temperature, for example, you're unstable to thermal convection if temperature decreases upward. And that's just because colder water is denser than hotter water. And so if you take a blob of fluid from the hot regions over there and raise it, then suddenly its density finds itself to be lower than the environment and continues to rise. So this is a direct linear instability, and it leads to very efficient convection. And then by contrast, if you have the temperature increases increasing upward, you now have density decreasing upward, and that sets up a stable stratification. And so if you start displacing blobs of fluid, they will have a tendency to oscillate, and that's what we call gravity waves. Now, in this audience, you'll all know that there's a little subtlety when we're talking about compressible fluids. And so it's not really the density gradient with respect to heights that matters, but it's really the density gradient with respect to pressure and how it compares with the local adiabatic gradient. So the standard criterion for overturning convection in astrophysics is really the first one up there, and it relates to the density gradient. Now, if density only depends on temperature, then you end up with the second one here. Now let's go back to the kitchen and now take a salt stratified solution. The criterion for instability to overturning convection is exactly the same as before. You'll be overturning unstable if density increases upwards. So in this particular case, say if you have salt water, if it's saltier at the top. And here, if you take a blob of fluid and put it down, then it will be denser than its surrounding, because salty water is denser than fresh water. And then again, you'll have this linear instability. A direct linear instability. And on the other hand, if you have a stably stratified salt solution, so with more salt at the bottom than at the top, then you'll set up these stable oscillations. All right. So this is for the context, and the question I'm going to ask today is what happens when you're having both cases? So you have, and that they're competing against each other. So you have either a stable temperature gradient with an unstable composition, or, and that actually, I'm not going to talk about it, but this is the whole idea of thermohaline convection. And the one I'm going to talk about today is when you have an unstable temperature gradient with a stable compositional concentration. So superficially, actually, the answer is really simple, and it's called the Ledoux criterion. And again, I don't think I have to explain it in this audience. You just look at the density. It's all to do with the density gradient. And if you expand the density in terms of its temperature and compositional dependence, you get this criterion. And that gives you a criterion for overturning instability, which is absolutely correct. The problem is the answer. The physics are actually a lot more complicated, and that's where double diffusive convection comes in. So if you have a system where you are in this kind of situation, but the density actually decreases upwards, so your density is stably stratified, and you start perturbing this fluid. If there were no diffusion whatsoever, you'd end up with a stable oscillation, just as shown in the dashed line. But because temperature can go in and out of the blob of fluid, you actually can excite an instability, which is an oscillatory type instability. And here's sort of how it works. So if you take this blob of fluid and bring it down, if it were not exchanging any temperature with its surrounding, it would be sort of a whitish color. And then it would start rising again because its density at this point would be slightly lighter, and then it would be up, and then it would be denser and come down. But now, because temperature can diffuse into the blob, it becomes a little bit hotter than it was before. And so when it comes back to its original position, it actually has an acceleration that's different from zero. And so it'll go a little bit further up than it did before. And now, it again, temperature can diffuse in, so it becomes cold, and when it comes back down, it'll go a little bit further down than it was before. So here we have this oscillatory instability that is sort of based on convection, but as you can see, it relies on temperature diffusing inside the blob of fluid to work, and so it's much, much, much slower than standard convection. And curiously, or maybe not curiously at all, the important number for this semi-convection or double diffusive convection is pretty much the same as Sylvie showed earlier, is this density ratio, which is the ratio of, and here I actually created the inverse density ratio, so the opposite way. So it's the stabilizing compositional stratification, grad mu, divided by the destabilizing thermal stratification, grad minus grad ad. So when this number is 1, we have the Ledoux criterion. When this number is smaller than 1, we're overturning unstable. And when this number is between, and you can show this through linear stability, when this number is between 1 and this, you're double diffusively unstable. And so the larger this number is, so if it's between 1 and here, you can see it's stably stratified, but so in terms of density, but the compositional stratification is not huge. And then when you're bigger than this number, you're fully stable. So it's So this is viscosity, this is the thermal diffusivity, and this is the compositional diffusivity. Okay. Please do keep me in check for that. So here is just a summary picture so far. So in the absence of compositional gradient, the correct criterion for stability versus instability is the Schwarzschild criterion. And if you're unstable, you're unstable. And if you're stable, you're stable to that criterion. In the presence of a compositional gradient, which is stabilizing, the correct criterion for overturning convection is the Ledoux criterion, which is here. But in between the Ledoux criterion and somewhere a little bit earlier than the Schwarzschild criterion, you have the possibility of double diffusive convection. And like I said, because double diffusive convection is relying on thermal diffusion, it's actually possibly only moderately efficient in terms of mixing. All right, so there's an added problem, however, and here's the crux. If you look at regions of the Earth which have these kind of dynamics, a good place to look for is the polar ocean, because you have icebergs releasing cold and fresh water on top of the hotter and saltier water below. And when you look there, what you often find is instead of stably stratified temperature and salinity it's stably stratified, but instead of smooth profiles, you'll find these staircases. And this is not the resolution of the instrument. This is real data that is extremely, very jagged. So these things here are extremely well-mixed layers separated by very sharp interfaces. And these layers are found in the salinity and the temperature profiles. They are typically hundreds of meter deep, well, tens to 100 meter deep. They are very very wide horizontally, maybe 100 kilometers. And then what's really important for what I'm going to talk about today is that the transport through the staircase is much more efficient than the transport through an equivalently stratified region but without a staircase, by up to an order of magnitude or two. So a little while ago we started looking at this with our group, and one of the ideas was really to study this in the context of the astrophysical systems. Now, through linear theory, you can find out that the typical scale of these instabilities is much, much smaller than the scale of the entire star. So what we are looking at doing are small box simulations which pick out a small region of the star. So we are using this local Cartesian box approximation. And then we maintain a temperature and compositional gradient across the box, sort of artificially. So there's a background linear temperature and compositional profile across the box. So the perturbations can be whatever they want at the bottom of the box, but they have to be equal to the height of the box times the temperature gradient exactly above that, if that makes sense. So these are the non-dimensional equations for the system in the Boussinesq approximation. And what I want to focus on are these parameters. So once the equations are non-dimensionalized, there are only three important parameters here. There's this density ratio, I told you about earlier. And then there's the ratio of the viscosity to the thermal diffusivity and to the of the compositional to thermal diffusivities. So these are the three numbers that characterize the system. And the final number is the height of the box, of course. So Stefan Stelmach developed this code that we are using to do this. And just for reference, it's a direct numerical simulation, so fully resolved on all scale, and it's triply periodic. So we're using triply spectral code. So in stellar interiors, in particular, and also in planetary interiors, these parameters we're trying to achieve in the simulations are very, very small. So the Prandtl number and tau in planetary interiors are 10 to the minus 2, and in stellar interiors are 10 to the minus 6. Now, this is a good number. These are numbers that tell you basically the ratio of scales. The basic instability scale is, say, 1, and then if a Prandtl number is 10 to the minus 6, it means that your viscous scale is 10 to the minus 6 of that basic instability scale. So we can't resolve that numerically. It's impossible. We can actually do the 10 to the minus 2. And that's sort of what we've done in the numerical simulation. So our results actually directly apply to the planetary regime, which is kind of nice. So these are the experiments we've been running. So Prandtl number and tau is 1/3, 1/10, 1/30, 1/100, and then some sort of non-equal numbers here. I don't know why I'm so out of breath. I'm trying to rush to finish on time. Okay, I think I have time to show. No, I don't actually. Okay, so typical experiments have two possible outcomes, and I'll show you one at the very end, I promise. So if you are in a parameter regime that is sort of close to being overturning unstable, you typically get something like this. So you end up in layered semi-convection, layered convection. If you are in a parameter regime which is further away from overturning convection, you end up like this. And this is a regime dominated by waves. The transport rate, as measured by these Nusselt numbers, so that's a measure of the turbulent mixing efficiency. In here, in the layered case, you can see it's pretty large, and it keeps on increasing. And these stepwise increase here corresponds to the mergers that we observe in the simulation. So initially, this simulation had three layers here, and then they merge into two, and then into one. And every time there's a merger, you increase the transport rates through the system. By contrast, in the layered case, the mixing rate, it varies a lot because of the layers, but the average mixing rate is pretty small. So if we want to answer the question of how do you model this kind of phenomenon in astrophysics, we have three questions. Can we predict when layers are going to form? Can we understand what controls the transport through a staircase and the merger dynamics? And then can we understand the third question, what controls transport without the layers? So the first part is to find out when layers actually form. And for this purpose, the work was already done in the oceanic case. And it was studied through a mean field theory, which basically looks at the simulations and notices that the staircase that emerge are actually much larger than the individual scale of the basic semiconvective or fingering instability. And then you average your equations in space, and you look at the evolution of the large-scale fields only, once you've averaged over all the small scales. And then you do a linear stability of the large scales, and you see what kind of modes emerge. And the basic physical mechanism for this layering or other instability is a feedback mechanism between the large-scale perturbations and the turbulent fluxes. So basically, if you imagine now you've averaged over your small scales, and you have large-scale perturbations, these change the local stratification. And depending on whether you're slightly more stable or slightly more unstable, you will change the turbulent fluxes locally. And these can then either reinforce your original perturbations or suppress them. And different feedback loops actually exist, and these different feedback loops correspond to different types of modes that you can see in the system. So for example, the layering mode is one such instability, and they basically take the form of exactly what you see. So these are very, very horizontally invariant and sort of short stacks of modes. And they grow in amplitude. So this is, for example, a density perturbation. So imagine them horizontally invariant, but this is a vertical variation. So as these modes grow in amplitude, they eventually overturn and lead to the formation of the staircase. And if you study the problem mathematically, you find that a necessary condition for this instability is that this flux ratio gamma minus 1 fold, which is the total flux of buoyancy due to composition divided by the total flux of buoyancy due to heat, which is mathematically is this, so minus kappa mu z plus the turbulent compositional flux divided by the same for temperature. So if this is a decreasing function of this, which is a measure of our stratification, then you can get layer formation. And basically, so then you can do a bunch of numerical experiments and find out when this is a decreasing function. So these are all the parameters I've told you about earlier. So for example, planetary interiors is this orange line, roughly. And you can find that this function is a decreasing function for this density ratio between 0 and, say, 4. So here's a prediction for planetary interiors. Now, of course, and what I should also say is in all the simulations we've run, we waited to see if layers form or not. And in nearly all of them, except some here, which take a really, really long time to do because they're really high resolution simulations, we haven't, in these ones, we haven't seen it yet, but we are confident we will. But in all of these, we've seen layers form whenever they should. And the layer growth rate, I'm not going to explain this plot, just to show you it fits. The layer growth rate fits our theory really well. The problem is, how do we actually apply this idea to stellar interiors? Because, like I showed you, the parameters in stellar interiors are another 4 order of magnitude removed from what we do in the simulations. And here's where a little bit of semi-analytics can go a really long way. So, and again, I'm not going to explain where this comes from right now, but basically you can create a model, a very easy mathematical model for how this quantity should vary with this, which is just a rescaled density ratio. And that just comes from linear theory, and these are these continuous lines. And I just wanted to show you that the continuous line fits our data for this density, for this flux ratio really well. So for the existing simulations, so now I can calculate that for what it would be in stellar interiors at these principal number and tau, and this is the plot. So basically, the prediction from this is that in stellar interiors at these values, the layers should form whenever this number, which is, if you remember this thing here, whenever this number is roughly less than 200, so layers are likely to appear, and above that, you have just a gravity wave dominated convection with very weak mixing. So once we know when layers form, and I hope I've convinced you we do, let's look at the transport through a staircase. So this plot shows a Nusselt number as a function of time. A Nusselt number is a total heat flux divided by diffuse heat flux. So diffuse means a radiative plus conductive heat flux. And that shows the evolution as a function of time for both the temperature and the compositional Nusselt number. So this is the initial growth of the instability. This is an initial stage where before layers form, and then this is the formation of the first 4 layers, and then 3, and then 2, and then 1. So each time there's a merger. So we can measure the heat flux, for example, in each of these stages. And what we find when we do this is that the heat flux is a fairly predictable function of this quantity here. Now, this quantity is a Rayleigh number, so the fluid dynamicists in the audience say, hi, this is obvious. Rayleigh number is this quantity up here. So it's a measure of, this is related to the density gradient. This is the layer height to the fourth, and these are just our diffusion parameters. And the fact that a Nusselt number scales like a Rayleigh number to the one-third should ring bells for some people. It's basically what you get for convection between two solid plates. And this is not entirely surprising. These layers act like solid boundaries to the fluid motion. There's an interesting little side story is that the prefactor is actually the same as that for convection between two plates. Now, this prefactor could depend on the Prandtl number. So for example, these are simulations at high Prandtl number, and the gray and black one are simulations at low Prandtl number, and they lie systematically below that. So there's some things to be done. This is very preliminary data. We need to study it a little bit more. But basically, the take-home message here is the mixing rate through a staircase depends mostly on the layer height and not much on anything else. And then finally, let's look at compositional transport through a staircase. And what we find, so this is this flux ratio. So another way of interpreting this flux ratio is the efficiency with which thermal convection can lift heavy elements, right? And we find that this flux ratio is roughly of order 1, regardless of the layer height, and for most of the parameter value we studied, so for high Prandtl number and for lower Prandtl number. Now, this is in fairly stark contrast with what you get from double diffusive convection in the ocean and other predictions that people have made, where this flux ratio should scale like the diffusivity ratio to the minus a half. Now, that scaling comes from assuming that the interfaces are diffusive, so that both fields are diffusing through the interfaces. Here's a picture of a simulation, and you can see that transport through the interface is very turbulent. It's due to very large plumes that just mix material. So again, this is something we need to do a little bit more theory on to understand better, but the prediction is that composition is mixed very efficiently as well by the staircase. So the remaining question is, what's the layer height? In all the simulations we've done, except one, and I'll show you that one later, the layers continue to merge until there's only one left in the box. So the question, if I stack two boxes on top of each other, would that just continue, these two merge, and then et cetera, right? And it's a crucial problem, since the flux through the staircase depends on the layer height. So this is kind of the missing link of the theory so far. So here's a proposal for a model for double diffusive convection, and I'm just going to skip that. This is the revised version of the picture I showed you earlier. So I've just zoomed in now to this region. So we now have two possible outcomes depending on the stratification of the background: layered semi-convection or layered double diffusive convection and non-layered one. In this particular case, the mixing is very efficient and depends on the layer height. And we know how it depends on the layer height, but we don't know what the layer height is. And then there's a transition at the critical density ratio, and we know what that value is, so that's fine, that's known. And then in the non-layered case, we have weak mixing, and it's really quite small. So if you worry about a factor of, if you worry about mixing being 10% more efficient than diffusive, then you'll need to worry about this. But if you don't worry about mixing being 10% more efficient than diffusive, then you can neglect that. So it sort of depends where you want to be. So I guess I'll finish by just showing this simulation. It's going to run, and I'll encourage you to ask questions while you're watching it. That's it.
Questions?
Yes, Pascal, I have a question about the molecular diffusivity. Because, in fact, the molecular diffusivity is nothing else than the diffusion coefficient in a blob between the inside and the outside. And so it depends on the chemical composition. And when I looked in the literature at the numbers that people give for the molecular diffusivity, they give the diffusion coefficient for helium. In fact,
right.
I mean, in the cases, maybe if you look at what happens at the edge of a convective core, I don't know, so helium is okay, but sometimes it's not helium, and I just would like hydrodynamicists to be aware that what they call kappa nu is in fact something which is not easy to compute, and it's not, you know. And something else is that about the molecular diffusivity. The molar diffusivity is nothing else than the self-diffusion of the most important particles in the medium. And so, in my opinion, at least when the most important element is hydrogen, which is not always the case, but when it's hydrogen, the molecular diffusivity should always be larger than the kappa nu, which means that the Prandtl number should be larger than the tau. Except if you are in a medium with where the dominant species are helium, for instance, and you look at the hydrogen versus helium. People should be aware of that. I mean, when you compute first to do a precise computation of kappa nu, instead of taking only helium value. And the second thing is the numbers. When people, I don't say that only for you now, but general way, when people play with the numbers to do simulations, to be sure that it's okay.
But Sylvie, these are non-dimensional calculations, right? You can. The idea is to run them for some values of the parameters, and then to try and provide a model which can then be used for any values of these parameters. So I agree that calculating these coefficients are hard, but this simulation, or at least the analytical model that we provide beyond the simulation, should be valid for any values of the parameters.
No, but you have prime numbers which are more than tau or less than tau.
Yeah. But that's not, I mean, we have a lot of simulations with Prandtl number different from tau as well. So I just gave an example here because.
Yes, but I would, yeah, just for real stars, at least hydrogen dominated, the Prandtl number could not be smaller than tau.
No,
that was just my comment.
Agree. I just gave an illustrative example earlier. Yeah?
First, I'd like to say it's a beautiful bit of work.
Thank you.
Having said that, there's another thing in stars that would be very interesting to introduce into simulations like this. That is, often the semiconvective regions are sitting near a convective region.
Right.
So I would imagine that you have this bathed in perturbations due to wave motion.
So,
for example, in massive stars, you certainly will.
So there's two aspects of this. There's whether the basic instability even makes sense, right? As a standalone process.
Yes.
The layers, once they're formed, are incredibly robust. So the only thing that might happen is they could merge, but they will never be destroyed and recreate a stable stratification. So the only thing the waves might do is modulate the fluxes by modulating the interfaces.
Which I think they probably do.
But that again...
You will have wave luminosities that are a non-insignificant fraction of the stellar luminosities in massive stars. We should talk about that
on
later.
On a different level, like on a completely different scale as well.
This is not a criticism of
right.
what you've done. I think what you've done is very nice. I'm just wanting you to go another step further.
There's another thing, I'm amazed nobody has mentioned it, is rotation.
I did not mention that. But I would.
The rotation time scale is actually quite fast compared to the growth of some of these instabilities, so that's something.
And that couples both to the convection and the semiconvection.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Other questions?
Well, first, I also want to congratulate you to really wonderful results, particularly I'm impressed with the low Prandtl number results. In one plot, you show Nusselt number versus Rayleigh number with the 1/3 power
mm-hmm.
low. There are also some hints that this could be possibly 2/7 or something else. But what I really want to ask is whether you have tried how much these results may depend on the aspect ratio of the box you're using for your simulations, because there are some at least laboratory convection research which they claim that it kind of depends on that.
So a lot of the aspect ratio dependence on some simulations and actually laboratory experiments in relative non-convection, you'll get a very different dependence on the aspect ratio depending on whether you have periodic boundary conditions or solid boundaries. That's one thing. So here we have the same problems of aspect ratio dependence as some of the periodic boundary condition ones. One of the things you can probably notice is that we only have there's one big plume in the box, sort of vertically, by the time the simulations ended. And that we always end up having that problem. So yes, we need to be very careful about this. Usually these things give you factors of order unity in the variation. So as a first order approximation, if you want to get an answer that's right within a factor of a few, that's probably better than alternatives.
But. Two questions. Well, first of all, I should say, like everybody else, this was a beautiful results, full stop, and a beautiful talk. The questions are, have you tried, first of all, to look at the actual conditions in the semi-convective region of some star, and compare that with the parameter ranges that you've been talking about here to see which regime you're likely to be in the regime where I don't have to worry, or the regime where I might expect layers? That's question number one.
Okay.
Question number two, would you care to speculate about the global structure of the layers that might form? Because if you really have a sort of a global discontinuity like that, that of course would have some seismic consequences.
Mm-hmm. So the answer to your first question is no. And the reason why is I am not 100% sure whether, the semi-convective region, quote unquote, that you get as an outcome of a stellar model typically has an interface. Right, so you assume constant composition on one side, constant composition on the other, more or less. And then so you have an infinite discontinuity, so your density ratio is infinite. Right? So
No, actually you have a gradient composition.
So then you have these trickery, numerical trickery, which smooth that out. Right? And that, so then I have not plugged that in. And it'd be interesting to find out. The fact that most of these models have, you know, one region that is unstable to Ledoux and then unstable to Schwarzschild, and you interpolate between the two, mean that these you will explore the entire instability range for semi-convection by definition of your models, right? So that's the answer to your first question. As to the structure of the layers in real stars, again, it's very tricky because we don't know when the layers would stop merging. So I have no idea whether you end up with a lot of little layers with very tiny density differences in between, which would appear as a smooth thing from the outside, or as one big interface, or a few big interfaces. I don't know.
A quick one. You jump from 3D to semi-analytic. Is there a role for 1D in between in terms of stellar modeling to see the effects of this?
Yeah, so I think going back to this, I would suggest something quite simple, where you have a model in which your transport is convective in this region, and it's negligible in that region. And in here, you have something which is a function of layer height, where your layer is an unknown parameter, and depends on the background relative temperature gradient. As prescribed earlier, so.
Just out of interest, I've got the Traxler et al. Scheme in Mesa for a couple of months and just need somebody to try it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's try it.
Okay.
Yes, last question here.
Hi. Just a quick question, because if I remember correctly, the results by Salsinger and Kupka, that they did this for stars of 15 and 30 solar mass, they showed that the layers did not mix throughout the lifetime of the star. This was published early this year. Does this have anything to do with the initial conditions that you're using, or is there some other more basic difference?
You know, I have to admit, I'm not familiar with their work.
Okay.
Was it
3D simulations that were published early this year.
Okay.
I can give you a reference. Yeah.
Okay.
Very interesting things. I really appreciate the discussion. And I'd like to first also really thank all the speakers for being extremely patient with me and truncating your talks to make time for discussion. So a round of applause for the speakers here. Reconvene at 4:00.